This is the Farming World News and Information from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. On the phone line, Joe Persaki of NASS, that's the National Agricultural Statistics Service in Washington, D.C., to discuss the United States Department of Agriculture acreage and quarterly grain stocks reports. Mr. Persaki, thanks for staying up today for us. I know you were busy in lockup last night.
Sure was. Took a little bit of nap, and I'm ready for you now.
Okay, so I must ask, that was probably a pretty big surprise before they when you first released it to the Secretary of Agriculture. Once those numbers came out, what were the first questions that came from the reporters this morning?
Well, there was several of them said we had phone calls in to both our field offices and the HQ, and it was like, is that correct? Are you missing anything? There was people stunned, unbelief, disbelief, and such. So a lot of phone calls this morning, new emails, a lot of phone calls.
And what were you missing?
I don't think we're missing anything. You know, people, it's really interesting. You know, farmers around the country, they'll say, well, Joe, every time a report comes out, corn prices go down. I said, well, what happened today?
So this is the one you're going to count on from now on? Is that
well,
right?
I don't know about that.
Oh, okay.
But it is what it is.
It is what it is. So how did you come up? Let's start with the acreage figures. Prospective plantings, of course, which was just accounting of what farmers told you at 88.8. Were you surprised at the 87.8?
Well, I don't know if the word surprised. It's like, okay, you take the data. You know, we did two surveys. We had about 70-some thousand, almost 72,000 farmer operators. We send questionnaires to mail, telephone, and field interview, and then we also had another 11,500 of these 1 mile square piece of land across the United States that we visited. And, I mean, this is what we counted. And it's like people say, well, how can that be? It's like, well, you look at it, there's two ways you can look at it. One, when we look at that area survey, I mean, we get something called year-to-year, a matched ratio on about 80% of those piece of land. It showed the same thing as what we call the direct expansion. It looks like maybe the weather, weather was good, but that was early on, and then it kind of tapered off a little bit.
Okay.
Weather-wise, and so maybe there was some switching to corn and beans. That's what people, kind of been speculating, and that's what we saw in our data.
Okay, so and where did you see that? I've got the numbers in front of me that you sent out and you showed to the secretary. So we have 600,000 more acres of corn in Illinois, 400,000 more in Indiana, 250,000 more in Ohio, 300,000 more in Missouri. People are starting to wonder how we got fewer acres at this point. Down 400,000, right, in Iowa.
Yep.
Down 100,000 in Minnesota. Nebraska down, 350,000?
Is that Nebraska's right? Down 350.
And Kansas was, too.
And in South Dakota's down 350
right.
As well.
Sorry.
I mean, so South Dakota's had some weather problems up there. We knew that as such. So we saw the acres down on that. And then, you flip the other side on beans. I mean, if you go on the other side, we saw the acres, going up in some of those states as well. If you look like to that I would say the western and northern, part of the Corn Belt, where Iowa's up 600,000 on beans. Minnesota's up 300,000 from last year. Nebraska record high on soybeans, up 600,000. Kansas up, record high 4.1 million acres. I mean, a lot of beans. It's a record high on beans, both on planted and what we expect to harvest. So,
and I do need to make note that, and you did, that those numbers are as comparison to last year, not to the March perspective.
Yeah, not to March, right, yeah, because March was just, that's what people were thinking before a planter hit the ground. So, and this is now, as of when our survey was conducted the first 2 weeks of June.
You think you got all the acres accounted for?
If you look at the principal crop acres, the total acres of land, across the U.S., I mean, we're just down just a smidge, down 400,000 acres from last year. We're looking at 318 million, almost 319 million acres of principal crops. So, I mean, we're, all the acres are there. I mean, and if you think about it, and I was telling somebody earlier today, if you think about it, with the big drop in winter wheat acres, you know, across like the, you know, like say Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, the eastern Corn Belt, you know, and south where you have a lot of double crop beans. If you take that wheat mix out of it, you almost have more acres of corn and beans tossed in there because you don't have that double crop counting of wheat and beans in those double crop states.
And then if you could follow up, let's turn the attention the other way and go to the quarterly grain stocks report.
Mm-hmm.
That number showed some interesting things in the corn. Can you kind of explain what the numbers look like as they came into you?
Yeah, okay. It was kind of interesting because on that survey we have two parts. You know, one part is what we call the off-farm grain stocks, which is, you know, any place that would have corn stored, you know, not a farmer. You know, it could be, you know, feed mills, ethanol plants, grain elevators, terminal facilities. And it was really interesting. We had a couple contacts, whatever, this morning. They said, well, are you guys not counting the ethanol plants? It's like, no, yeah, we're counting the ethanol plants if they've got grain in storage. So we've got that part. And then that 72,000 farmers we contacted on the, you know, the acreage side, we also asked them how much, you know, the principal indicators, how much corn do you have stored on your farm? And it wasn't there. I mean, we showed record high disappearance for this quarter. You know, people have been talking about, oh, grain quality and such. You know, one thing we're surmising and we're hearing is that, you know, people are moving this crop off their farm. You know, I was talking to a farmer there up in kind of northwest Iowa, you know, and you just call, you know, he calls every once in a while, just tell me, you know, his personal situation. I don't know the guy, but he calls every once in a while. And he was hauling grain. That's what they've been doing all week. So, I mean, people are moving grain.
Okay, so Joe, we're going to start taking phone calls now. Daryl Good's in studio. He's
okay,
got a question,
hey,
question for you, but let me give the numbers out real quick. If you have a question for Joe or for Daryl, either one, you can give us a call. Here's the number. It's 217-333-9455. That's 217-333-9455. Dial in your question now if you have one for Daryl or for Joe.
Joe, just a quick question on the acreage number. At the end of your survey period, it would appear that some acres were not yet planted, and there is some talk of prevented planting in the really wet areas. In your normal crop production estimating process, when would you pick up any of that information about either a shift in acres or some unplanted acres?
Right. Okay, when we were out in June, that first part of June, you know, it started like right at the end of May, like the 27th, 28th of May, and it ran through about the 15th of June-ish, like that. We did ask on the area side, because we can see it when we're out there visiting, you know, how much corn was left to be planted. And this year it was, you know, 1%-ish. It was very tiny this year compared to, you know, the last couple years we had some planting issues going on. So it was very small left to be planted. The farmers that were actually think they're going to plant corn, it was 1%-ish like that.
Joe, were you in Iowa? And I can't come up with this quite right. I was thinking about what Iowa's predicament looks like this year and Illinois looks like this year. Were you in Iowa the year that there was so much rainfall, and not last year, I think?
It was 2008. That's the year I moved back to D.C. from Iowa.
Yeah, so it was 08, and they had so much rainfall. And can just in your mind, can you compare that year to this year? And what did the Iowa final yield look like that year?
Well, see, in that year, I mean, because, you know, somebody asked me, what about corn yields? Well, in the U.S. and then Iowa's in the mix, the top six corn yields have happened in the last 6 years. So, you know, when you say, yeah, it was bad, you know, in that 2008, they had flooding. That's when Cedar Rapids went underwater, if you remember.
Right.
Well, if you were close to any waterway, yeah, it was bad for you. I mean, you had fields underwater and they were gone. But you have to remember that flood, that rain event, that was earlier. That was around the early part of June. Now, there were some people possibly that we saw that reseeded the beans possibly there. Here, we're not seeing that. It's just different this year. You've got a lot of rain, and you've got some ponding. We've heard it. You know, you've got ponding spots there in Illinois as well, but it's not, you know, the same situation as in 08, and that turned out to be a really good year.
Todd, just one observation that might fall in the category of trivia and maybe of not much relevance to the current situation, but we did take a look at June rainfall in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, and compared it to June rainfall over the past 50 years. This year was the wettest year we've ever had, if you average the rainfall in those three states. If you look at the previous 5 years of the wettest Junes, in all five of those years, the U.S. average corn yield was below trend value. Whether that will follow this year or not, but I think there is some common perception that you can't get too much rain in June. I think history would suggest that at the levels of rainfall we had this June, we would expect it to have some negative impact on yield. A disaster, no. It's still going to be very high yields, very good yields, but we may be starting out a little bit too high on our yield expectations this year.
Did you actually also figure out what the percentage off of trend line that was?
The biggest drop was in 93, of course, because June right. rainfall was also followed by July flooding. But the average shortfall from trend value was about 1.5-2 percentage points. So not huge, but I think the interesting part is we were never above trend yield in years when we've had an extremely wet June.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. If you'd like to join our conversation this afternoon, we still have maybe 10 minutes or so to talk with both Joe Persaki of NASS in Washington, D.C., Daryl Good, ag economist here at the University of Illinois. You can do that. The phone numbers to call are 217-333-9455 or 800, that's toll-free, 222-9455. Please do give us a call, 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455 if you have a question or comment for either of these folks. Joe, what was the number that you saw that surprised you the most that just seemed unbelievable even as a statistician?
Well, I don't know if I don't surprise. I really don't get too surprised in this because I'm seeing numbers and I'm seeing numbers come in. But, you know, the one we had a group of interns in and their counselor, their guide or whatever, you know, they were in for the briefing. They asked, you know, after the briefing, they says, well, what's the biggest thing you think of this? And I said, well, it's got to be corn. I said, because the industry expectations, and you've seen this in the various, different places, well, both the acres and the stocks were well below what the trade was expecting. So, I mean, of course, I mean, and we see the prices. I'm guessing the prices were almost limit or close to it. I didn't look this afternoon, but this morning I know they were.
Indeed, they were. They were, at least for corn, but beans didn't react particularly
well.
Much
and as I told, and it's like I told this group of students, it's like, I said, economics is working here. I said, because the market is expecting beans to be in this range. Well, and that's where we came in. That's where, you know, USDA and NASS, that's where we came in with beans on both stocks. And acres is what the, you know, trade was expecting. And then on the other side, on wheat, the acres and the stocks were much, much higher than what the trade was expecting. So, I mean, so it does work. And the thing that people say is, like, how do you miss things? Or whatever, could you miss anything? Well, we use the same procedures. It's the same survey that we collect both the corn, the bean, and the wheat information. It's like, okay, well, how can corn be, you know, different than the other two? Well, this is the numbers. I think this is right. This is where we are.
Joe, stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. You're listening to The Farming World. Joe Persaki is with us from USDA NASS, as is Daryl Good from the Ag Economist section here at the University of Illinois.
It's National Ice Cream Soda Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1831, the first U.S. patent for a platform scale was issued to the Fairbanks brothers of St. Johnsbury, Vermont. In 1886, the U.S. Division of Forestry was established by an act of Congress. The act also opened up timberland for legitimate uses and established the principles by which federally owned forest land would be reserved for public use. In 1905, the U.S. Division of Forestry moved from the Department of the Interior to USDA. In 1906, the Pure Food and Drug Act and the Meat Inspection Act were passed by Congress. In 1985, James A. Dewar died. He is the creator of the golden sponge cake with a creamy filling. better known as the Twinkie. By the way, Twinkies originally contained banana cream filling, but was replaced with vanilla cream filling during a banana shortage during World War II. And in 1996, Dr. Edward Anton Asselberg is believed to have died. He developed the process for making instant mashed potato flakes, the patent that is still used worldwide today. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Farming World News and Information from the University of Illinois and Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason in studio with us today. Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I, on the phone line. Joe Persaki of USDA NAS. Joe, I want to take you through one other set of numbers, or actually a couple of tech numbers, the biotech numbers eventually. But let's start with the acreage figures again. Harvested acres at 81 million this year, at 1.8% bigger than... Let's see, what's that, 1.8% bigger than previous year, and the estimate and the planted was 1.6%. I suppose that only has to do with the rainfall last fall. Is that right?
Yeah, because when we look at, when we do the survey, we get, planted, and then we get harvested, and then obviously then we calculate a harvest-to-planted ratio. Then we look at that, and it could be, some years, they're thinking more silage at this time, and then there could have been already incorporating in some planted acres that have already disappeared as well. And so, that's what we're possibly seeing there. But in this case, we're expecting to harvest more, and that's what you're seeing there is because of the conditions last fall.
Okay, and then let's take a look at some of the things, other things that you collect along the way. Biotech varieties and as a percent of all planted acres for corn, soybeans, and upland cotton. Can you go through those numbers?
Yeah, because on the survey, we've been asking that question about, this biotech, because it's been a play, an issue. And it's like, well, this year on corn, we came in at 86% of all corn varieties planted were somehow biotech. That could be herbicide resistant, insect resistant, or, double stacked or such. And, that's up just one percentage point from last year, where soybeans and upland cotton this year are sitting at 93%. So that's pretty much... almost all the acres are biotech on soybeans and cotton, and with the soybeans, that's up 2 percentage points from last year, and in cotton is up, this is 5 percentage points. And we saw quite a bit increase in cotton acres this year as well, so the new acres, those added acres were pretty much all this biotech, it looks like.
Can you tell me the types and differences here on the biotech, because you have the stack genes, 09 and 10, you have herbicide resistant only, and you have insect resistant only. So one doesn't capture the other. Is that right?
Separate. Like on soybeans, it herbicide resistant. We don't have any, and we're not picking up any sort of insect resistant soybeans.
Right
now. So basically, it's glyphosate tolerant soybeans is what that is. And then where corn, the herbicide resistant only, you may have just a it's only resistant to herbicide, or you may have it only resistant to insects, and then you could have one that's both, which is becoming more common, where it's both insect resistant and herbicide resistant together. That's the stack gene, or they have other characteristics in there as well.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, when you show this year, for instance, you show herbicide resistant at 22%. At 23%, BT only at 16%, and then stacked at 47. But the stacked really doesn't include the other two because it could. Well, it must not because you put down all biotech varieties at 86%.
Let's see here. Let me do the math real quick.
Yeah. So I know I'm right.
Okay.
I'm pretty certain that I'm right. It's a matter, but I thought it was pretty interesting that stacked genes accounted in the corn crop this year at
47%.
Of the about half of the crop was a stacked gene crop, and then you had 23% of the crop that was herbicide resistant, Roundup Ready, probably, or Liberty Link or something along those lines, and then there were some folks, not much, was just BT only crop.
Right.
And so the stacked genes really have made the big push, and I'm wondering whether we'll eventually see that show up in our yield numbers. And Darrell Good might have something to say about that more than anything else. But it's interesting to watch those numbers jump up. How quickly do you think that these numbers jumped up compared to on the stacked gene, that is, compared to moving the soybean crop to Roundup Ready. So the adoption.
Yeah, the corn was quite a bit faster, than on soybeans. Because soybeans, we've been doing this for quite a long time, and corn, we were down. The percentages were quite a bit lower, say 5 years ago, than where we are now. I mean, it's just been the technology change in corn.
Any final word from you before I let you go for the day?
Again, I just, Todd, thanks a lot. Again, I want to thank all the farmers and ranchers and producers out there that took the time to fill out the surveys, either phone, personal interview, or by mail, internet, because farmers are the ones that give us the best information. They know what's going on with their operation better than anybody else, and I appreciate the time. And I thank Darrell for, providing some insight because he's one of the best.
Thank you so much, Joe. Joe Persaki is with USDA and NAS. Darrell Good, any final word from you before I let you go, too?
I think we've covered everything pretty well today,
Todd. A lot of it. We've gone through it. And Darrell Good from the University of Illinois, Ag Economist. You've been listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. If you'd like to hear this or other agricultural programming, you can always visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Don't forget to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. And if you do that today, you'll also get the newsletter that was produced that goes along with the USDA reports this morning and links to this particular set of interviews.